Welcome to the Run Nerd Library Podcast, a podcast for those who eat, sleep, breathe, train, think, talk, and read about running, and those who are curious. I'm the host, Don Hahn, a self-proclaimed run nerd. I consider myself more of a running enthusiast than an expert, fueled by coffee and blind optimism. This podcast will feature running experts talking about their books, and enthusiasts like me who are here to discuss their books with them. Whether you're listening on your commute or on your run, we are happy to have you here. Hello, and welcome back to the Run Nerd Library Podcast. This is episode 3. I am your host, Don Hahn. And this month is May, and we are participating in Mental Health Awareness Month. We have several great guests coming on to the podcast this month to talk about their works and to help us explore ways to use athletics, to use mindfulness and other tactics to help us with our own mental health throughout the year, throughout our lives. My first guest this month is Todd Corbin. Todd is a mindfulness coach and the author of Mindfulness for Student Athletes. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Thank you, Don. It's great to be here today.
Great. We appreciate you having being here with us. I would love to kind of get to know a little bit about your background as an athlete. Can you talk to us about how you got started in athletics, what some of your favorite sports are?
Sure. So in school, I was, you could say, like a multi-sport student athlete. Played a lot of different sports. The ones I focused primarily on were golf and baseball. You know, golf in the fall, baseball in the spring. Played a lot of tennis as well. So indoors in the winter a lot of times. Although I did even play a little bit of golf in the winter. orange golf balls too. But when I... Part of being an athlete in various athletics is you're going to do a lot of running anyway. And so baseball kind of got me started with the running bug, if you will, and in high school. And then I had a roommate in college that was a runner. And so I would go with him and he would usually leave me in the dust. It was, it's like, oh, wow, this is running? I don't want any part of it. So really was right after college, another friend of mine who had graduated at the same time at a different school, he was much taller, but we were about the same pace in terms of running. And he got me going. And so that was in my early 20s. And so decades later, I am still running, still loving it. Love all sports. I'm one of those, I would say, sports enthusiast. And so I play a lot of things. I have two boys that are that were teen athletes, student athletes. They're both in college now. So got to coach for a while as well. Coached baseball for about a decade or so in that mix. So a lot of sports mindset in my life going on right now. To this day, to this moment.
Absolutely. And what a great experience getting to coach your own kids through their youth athletic experiences. I also had that opportunity with my daughters, coaching them in track and cross country. And it's something that we'll share forever, as I'm sure you and your boys will.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I mentioned that you're a mindfulness coach when I introduced you. Can you tell us what mindfulness is and what a mindfulness coach does?
Absolutely. So we probably, you can't really go anywhere in the world right now without hearing mindfulness something, a mindful this, a mindful that, right? Mm-hmm. You know, one article put it like the McMindfulness, like McDonald's, everything is a bite-sized piece of mindfulness. And so, but what it really is, and simply put, it's paying more attention to a couple of areas. They're pretty key areas when you kind of think about it. Our thoughts, mm-hmm. You know, what's going under our hood, the internal conversations, the pictures we create. That's a big component. Paying more attention to our emotional state, our feelings, which are a little different than emotions. But that is a huge piece. And then you kind of look at, okay, I have a body, right? Paying attention to what's going on internally, my body sensations, am I sore? Am I tight anywhere? Do I feel pretty good? Am I, you know, do I have an ache and pain somewhere? So all those pieces. And then surrounding all that are the surroundings. They're our environment and the interplay and the relationship between thoughts, feelings, what's going on in my body and the environment I'm in. Am I on a track? Am I on a trail? Am I in a pool? Am I, you know, at the store or with friends? And so contextually, things change and a relationship changes based on where we're at, right? And so being aware of all those pieces is a huge part of mindfulness, but it's not just needing to be aware of it, you know, to notice what's happening as it's happening, because then it's like, well, what do I do with it? You know, I'm noticing now, you know, it's thoughts in my head and they just keep running and I'm not as good as I was yesterday. And, you know, maybe that's true or not. I don't know. But then what happens is you kind of have a sense, and being mindful is being a little bit more objective, being a little bit more curious rather than judgmental. Mm-hmm. And so from the standpoint of I'm noticing my thoughts, feelings, body sensations, instead of saying, ooh, that's not good. Why did you keep running those extra, you know, you push yourself too hard. Maybe you didn't stretch, you know, it's like you're beating yourself up a little bit. That's not being mindful. There's awareness to it, but that's being hurtful. So mindfulness has this component, yes, being aware, but being aware with a little bit more kindness and curiosity. And then using that information, it's like, okay, what do we do now with this, right? That's where you get insights, and that's where you can kind of get the information that says, ooh, this could be helpful for me if I notice it in this way, or this is not helpful. Let's do a little bit less of that. And then you take action with that. So there's a couple of components there, but it's not just like sitting and meditating and just, you know, noticing and just allowing things to happen. You know, it's pretty active. It's an active way of being mindful. So,
as a coach, as a mindfulness coach, mm-hmm. You're working with athletes of all levels to understand these principles, to kind of guide them through. And we'll talk about in the next segment, we'll talk about the workbook and we'll talk about the card deck a little bit more and some of the activities that go along with that. But just in kind of a brief summary of what you do in the role of a coach, how do you help kind of merge those ideas of awareness and then on the back end, it's great you realized what you did, but now how do you do something else with that? How do you fix whatever the mistake was? How do you grow from that experience?
Exactly. So like my role as a coach, it's not too different than a sports coach in a sense, because a sports coach would focus on the physical skills development, right? Mm-hmm. The training aspect, the preparing you for the competition, mm-hmm. and getting you fit in the way that you need to be fit. So my role in a coach, and I would say mindfulness coach, mental skills coach that teaches mindfulness, is more about how do we get your mind ready for all that, right? And so mm-hmm. the component of that is how do you work with your mind? And this is how I work with athletes and how I work with coaches too, because the sports coaches or the parent or just the athlete and themselves, it's like, you know, you're going to have a lot of focus for the physical skills and maybe a little bit for the mental skills. There's this like kind of paradox. We spend very little time really spending with how do we enhance our mental abilities and our awareness about what is most important and what is most helpful. Again, sports coaches do a terrific job of working the physical skills. And I'm kind of like this conduit between the other half where, you know, everybody says, you know, every athlete is like, you know, how much is it mental? Well, you know, 80%. Yet we don't spend 80% of our time working on the mind. So mm-hmm. that's where I come in. And so a lot of the mindfulness piece with mental coaching per se is what I do. And that's like helping athletes, helping people understand to let things be as they are, okay? Mm-hmm. To notice, have this a way that they can observe, and to notice instead of observing, to notice when the mind is coming in and they're commenting about what they've seen, and to notice the context of the commenting. Is it helpful? Is it not helpful? And then, because a lot of us, we're human beings, we get caught up in things, right? I got to do it this way. My coach says I have to do it this way, but this is not working. Well, I'm struggling, right? Mm-hmm. And you can't let go of certain things, right? Maybe you have a specific time that you need to, you know, in the trials that you have to hit, and it, you're just not getting there. Mm-hmm. And so from a standpoint of, can I just, not getting there right now, not yet, can I let that be, and then figure out what I need to do? And then to wrap around all of this piece, another part, a big part of my role as a coach, is to help athletes, help people to develop more of a capacity to cultivate the positive emotion, to cultivate the positive things in their lives. And that is a lot of the awareness to notice what I did well. Mm-hmm. You might have had a poor practice, a poor training session, and all you can think about is, I stunk. Okay. But there's always pieces that you did well. Okay. And to key in on that, and not to ignore what needs to improve, but also then to look at and say, okay, what can I do better?
Would you say, is it common, and sorry to interrupt, but
yeah, no problem.
Is it common amongst your athletes? I think in general, people sort of reflect on what they didn't do well with more gravity than what they did do well.
That is absolutely right.
Is, mm-hmm. I'm going to do this right. So when it doesn't go right, they're sort of more critical on themselves. And there's a great
That's exactly. And you know what? That's how human beings are created. That's how our brains are wired. Yeah. And I love this analogy I use. It's like everybody's been through an airport at least some point, you know, in our lives. And so we pass through the TSA, the security checkpoints, and those folks are always on high alert. They're always looking for potential threat. Mm-hmm. And that is how our brains are wired. And literally the science points to that when we notice something happening, we will give four times the impact if it's negative than if it's positive. And so we lean towards the negative with almost every observation we make. So yes, we might do a couple things right, but imagine this, you do 10 things right and one thing wrong. I say quote unquote wrong, because there's no such thing as wrong, and it's just how we view it. Yeah. But we will focus on that one thing instead of the 10 things we did right. And so that is absolutely true. And so the mindfulness is to recognize our tendency to do that, and then to almost rewire, literally, this is what happens. You rewire your brain to kind of then at least be more neutral about observing what's happening as it's happening. And then if you do comment, which you probably will, to kind of notice that, okay, yeah, I'm doing that, but this is what's happening right now. This is what's here. Mm-hmm. And so can I be here with it instead of overlaying my comments about this? There's time to reflect. There's always time to add pieces to, you know, what you're doing, right? But if you're involved in an activity, that's not the right time to do it. You, when you're at the starting blocks and or you're racing and you do not want, or, you know, You're in the batter's box. You do not want your mental, your mind giving you 12 thoughts to think about, or, you know, you're on the golf course, and I played a lot of golf. And so people always say, you know, the worst thing you can do is to be thinking about your swing when you're swinging. It's absolutely true. You don't want to be in your head.
Right. And I think you shared a quote from Kobe Bryant on your social media feed. I believe it was yesterday. And can you kind of talk through that quote? And because I think it ties into this conversation, his mindset is definitely a unique mindset, mindset of a true champion. But the way he talks about failure, You think about somebody who has all the accolades that he does in basketball, or that he did.
Yeah.
And he's talking about failure. And I just kind of define, if you don't mind talking about that quote a little bit, and defining that transition for an athlete from looking at something like you said, they did something wrong, or there's that sense of failure, when really maybe it's more of a growth opportunity. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, from a mindfulness perspective, things either work or they don't work. Okay. That's the perspective, because you're observing, you're noticing. Failure is a judgment we put on something, and people say, yeah, you fail. I mean, I didn't make the team. Is that a failure? Well, it's a result. Mm-hmm. Okay. Something happened. Yes, you didn't make it. Yes, it probably wasn't enjoyable. And so, but again, it's this growth mindset, this allowing, okay, can't change that, make the team right this moment, right? Mm-hmm. So I have to deal with it, okay? And so what is there in that? It's the lesson in that. It's the, okay, this is a big piece with mindfulness, and this is a lot of what I work with the athletes and the coaches on. Where is your focus? Where's your attention point on that? And so that result is, yeah, a lot of people could say you failed, right? You get an F on a test, that's failure, right? But it's also a result. And you can kind of look at, okay, what is there in that? What is the lesson? What do I need to do to improve, which is the growth mindset? Because you're not a static entity. Just because I didn't make the team, just because I didn't win the race or didn't get the time I wanted, or, you know, missed the shot at the end of the game, doesn't mean that I'm a failure. It just means I didn't make the shot. Mm-hmm. It just means I didn't get the time. And so, yes, the media will come out and say they're a failure, right? And some teammates or on the other side might say that too. But we have this so much of too much of an emphasis on success and failure, mm-hmm. is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. And if we can, back to your point from earlier too, mm-hmm. about the 10 things you do right, and then the one thing that doesn't go the way you intended.
Yeah.
So that player that may have failed at the end of a game or a match, probably contributed in positive ways throughout the rest of the event.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is so true, because you kind of, again, it's how you focus your mind. Mm-hmm. Right. And again, it's not, you're not being oblivious to things that are not working. Absolutely not. I'm not saying that. You're using what you've done to enhance what you can do in the next moment. And so what you've done is you've done some good things. You've done some things that need improvement. And so you look at that, and then you're like, okay, there's the insight. And really good coaches key in on that in that way. What did I do well? Mm-hmm. Here's what I need to do better. And there might be 12 things you need to do better. Okay, so that's, you work on those things. And then you kind of lay that all out and say, okay, what am I going to do about that right now? And what needs to be done right now? And then that's how you improve in a very positive way, as opposed to beating yourself down. It's about, you know, blaming yourself for not getting what you wanted.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we're going to get more into that in the next segment as we talk about the workbook and the card deck. So we'll be right back with you in just a second here. Okay, this is segment two with Todd Corbin. And in this segment, we're going to be talking about his workbook, Mindfulness for Student Athletes, and the accompanying card deck that goes along with it. So, Todd, this is a product that, for me personally, I came across shortly after you published it. And for the listeners, Todd and I go back probably 20 years or so, I believe. We actually had worked together at a publishing company back in the early 2000s. So that's how we got to know each other a little bit. And as I started this venture, Run Nerd, Todd was actually one of the first people that I reached out to let him know kind of what was going on. And it was largely in part because of this book. And just a little sidebar, a little anecdote from our personal experience with it. My youngest daughter, Emmeline, was a gymnastics gymnast in her. I think she started probably around the time she was 8 or 9, and she competed for about 5 years at U.S. Junior Olympic level competition. And so, you know, those kids work hard. They're in the gym 16 to 20 hours a week, every week, with the exception of maybe like 1 or 2 weeks out of the year. Training, competing, mindfulness is a big part of that. We'll get into that in just a second with some of the activities and the tools that Todd can share with us that you guys can take away with you after this episode and use with your student, use with your child, use with your athlete. But for Emmeline, she went through a series of injuries while she was competing in gymnastics. She had a broken foot. She broke her finger. As you come back from injury in any sport, there's always the mental doubt, the feeling that I'm not going to be able to get back to where I was, or it's going to take a long time to get back to where I was. I'm starting from scratch again. And that can be an overwhelming feeling. For Emmeline, she got to a point where she was really struggling with her confidence. As you move up in gymnastics, for those of you who have competed or watched or had a child compete in gymnastics, the level of difficulty as you grow gets more and more intense, whether it's on the beam, whether it's on the bars, on the floor routines, any of the apparatus. And so to be in a position where your confidence is waning is really a challenge, because you're doing some high risk maneuvers. And so one of the things that I did was I got a copy of this workbook for Emmeline, and it helped her to get herself into the moment and kind of start to cast away some of that self-doubt that Todd was talking about in the previous segment. Really got her focused on being in tune with what she was doing at that exact moment, rather than worrying about what if something goes wrong. So I found that this was a great resource for her. She utilized it probably as like a 12 or 13 year old. So I just wanted to say thank you, Todd, for the workbook, because it did really help her as she was continuing in her gymnastics experience.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, so I would love to hear from you. If you could give us kind of an overview of the workbook and the cards, and then we'll kind of talk about how a coach, athlete, or parent would use those.
Yeah, absolutely. So the workbook, Mindfulness for Student Athletes, when I wrote it, the intention was to have a resource that could be very in the moment, if you will, applied for an athlete based on whatever was happening. And so the workbook itself is 32 activities. And there's a lot of content in there. I say activities, but there's a lot of meat in there. It starts with what is a mindful athlete? Okay. Not just what a student athlete is, but what is a mindful athlete? So if you're an athlete, or you know, you coach or you work with athletes, or you're a professional counselor or trainer and you work with athletes, you know, the components of being mindful apply to athletics wherever you are. And so again, the intention was I wanted a way to give in bite-sized pieces content that could in essence be self-contained. And then when you put them all together, they give you a program, a plan, a way to build the curriculum, if you will, mm-hmm. to adapt and to integrate into whatever sport you're playing. And so the 32 activities are all designed and kind of mirror each other in terms of the layout. And anything from, we talk a lot about stress, and we'll get into that, I know, later on, stress and anxiety, mm-hmm. but noticing that, being more aware, what does that look like for an athlete? What does that look like when you're just performing at your job, right? Or right. As a parent, we're on go most of the time as a parent, right? Even though we're not at work, we're at home doing things. Mm-hmm. And then being able then, a lot of it is written. Okay, so there's a lot of science behind, okay, ask a question, fill in the blank, talk about this from a standpoint of what did you experience? What did you notice? Specific examples. And then to have the tools, if you will, embedded within each of the activities. So yes, people say, okay, is there, you know, teach me some breathing practices. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of those embedded into that. You know, at the beginning, we talk about awareness of thought, right? And so there's activities focused on being more aware of thoughts, integrating more thought awareness to build confidence, thought awareness to build mental strength, thought awareness to build, as you mentioned, Don, with your daughter, overcoming the fear when an athlete comes back from injury and the pain of that, mm-hmm. the physical, the emotional, the mental, right? There's all of those pieces in there. And so all the activities have, again, they're kind of self-contained, or they, as a whole, build this curriculum so that by the time you go through everything, you'll have a really good fundamental grasp of what it means to be mindful, how to integrate it in your life, and how to use it, not just in athletics, because, you know, we're talking, this is mindfulness for athletes, right? Mm-hmm. But in all our lives, right? In everything we do. Because if I'm learning how to build my focus and to calm myself down when I'm feeling more stressed or anxious or whatever, you know, I'm getting upset because the call didn't go my way, right? To have that skill to down-regulate, to notice what's happening, but without being reactive, that's yeah. just as valuable at your job or dealing with an activity that you're immersed in. Because it's about performance. You want to be a little bit better than you were yesterday at whatever it is you were doing. And so there's, no matter what you're doing in activity wise, running, playing tennis on a field, playing soccer, whatever, or at work, there's spillover, mm-hmm. you know, moods carry, right? And so if that's the case, then we need to be aware of what's happening so that we can kind of allow things to be, and then just to kind of like, okay, I'll offload, you know, if I'm getting on the track and I had a tough day with lots of exams for thinking kids and my brother was yelling at me, parents gave me something and I got a job to go to later on this evening, you know, can I offload that? Can I just allow it to be? And that's, this workbook really does that. And then with the cards in particular, so the card deck, there's 57 cards. And what I try to do, because, you know, athletes are on the go all the time. Maybe you could take the book, and sometimes you do, but a card is very portable, okay? And there's reasons why they're a little bit thicker. But what I've done is each card, and I should work back, so within mindfulness, there's really five core areas. This is kind of important. This is kind of the way I view mindfulness per se. And I use this acronym. Okay, it's the number 2 and the letters B, SET. B-S-E-T. And in order to, anything you need to do, you have to be ready. You have to be set, mm-hmm. right? Have a good mm-hmm. foundation. The 2 B's stand for breath and body. So the awareness of breath, the awareness of body, those pieces. And then the awareness of senses. Remember we talked about surroundings, right? Mm-hmm. How do you know what's going on around you? That you use your senses. And so that piece is a huge piece. And then the E in to be set is emotions. And so we talk about generating. This is really helpful in the book. We talk about this. Obviously, you know, how do you move through distressing emotions, there's an activity in here, breathing through difficult moments. Think about that. Wouldn't that be wonderful to just kind of allow it to be, breathe through it? So there's actually steps to do that. So we talk about that. So what in the cards, each card is a, and then the T for to be said is thoughts. So those are five components. The way the cards are structured is there's certain cards for breath, for body, for senses, for emotions and thoughts. So it gets really focused, where the book is a little bit more broad. You can use the cards to really narrow things down. And so, okay, yeah, I really want to work on my mental game in terms of building confidence, or I really want to work on what does it look like? Okay, I got, you know, I'm overwhelmed. I got this feeling of overwhelmed. And how do I deal with that emotionally, or how do I build positive emotion? Mm-hmm. And so there's all those pieces. And then I have some integrated cards, which use multiple areas of mindfulness, you know, a couple of the to be set, you know, there's senses and breath. And then there's some scenarios for coaches, thinking that coaches or parents are going to use this in their teams. Yeah. And that's really important.
If we could pause right there for a second, because it goes back to something you said earlier about 80% of sport being mental. But not having that focus on the mental aspect of it in training. So this is really a tool that you've created that a coach can use. And you've mentioned to me in previous conversations, like they can keep the deck in their sports bag, in their coach's pack.
Exactly.
And pull out a card. And that's going to be the card that they're going to focus on this practice or this week. Almost like you would do with a deck of yoga cards where you're going to introduce a new yoga pose or something like that. But it's a way for a coach who may not be as well versed in mindfulness. And there's a whole spectrum of how well versed coaches are on mindfulness, from this is the first time they're hearing about it to they may be a mindfulness coach themselves. Right. That's the spectrum. So for the coach who isn't familiar or wouldn't know where to get started, something like the card deck would be a great tool just for that purpose, where they can break out a card and talk about the breathing exercise.
Exactly. And just to kind of point out one thing too, and didn't mean to interrupt, but within the card deck, which is really nice again to speak to somebody new. Okay, you're a new coach, you know, or you're not a new coach, but you're new into mindfulness. So in the workbook, there is some activities that kind of go through, I'm a coach, here's how to teach it. But in the cards, I have this fold-out guide. So it really says, okay, how do I use these cards? When might I use them? How can I get the most out of, how can I integrate them? And exactly to speak to your point, Don, in terms of, okay, I'll just use one card in practice, or I'll give it to my team captains and let them lead a practice about what that is. And there ways to integrate into what you're already doing, because I was a sports coach myself, and I kind of know you only have limited time. And so how could I do what I'm already doing, but then integrate a mindfulness practice where it may add maybe 1 to 2 minutes, but now you're looking at something through a different lens, and then that becomes really usable. So I love the cards. That's why I think they're really much more on the go. Pull one thing out. I mean, I love the book. Obviously, it's like that's why it's a workbook. You really utilize it, but the cards are something that no matter what level you are at, no matter what level your athletes are at, you're teaching certain principles and giving them an activity to do. As something as simple as, okay, extend your exhale. Literally, okay, focus. Everybody's breathing. We breathe 20,000 times a day. You know, athletes will pay attention to their breath only usually when they're out of breath or hurt, right? But if you know the principles of the breath, you'll know that you can give a signal to your brain when you're feeling upset if you just allow, and people say, take a deep breath. That sounds all wonderful, but how do you do it? No, what you really want to be able to do is extend the time that you breathe out. And I use this analogy, breathing out is like your body's parachute. You jump out of an airplane, hopefully you have a parachute. You pull the ripcord, parachute comes out, slows you down. The exhale slows you down, gets your mind slowing, gets your body slowing. And it's this signal saying, you know what? Yes, you didn't get that call. Yes, you didn't make that shot. Yes, coach is yelling at you, but it's not life or death. I could take a breath and then I feel a little calmer. Doesn't mean I'm not still freaking out, but now I'm able to manage that situation a little bit better.
Yeah. So I want to touch on a couple of things. First thing is, our listeners, broad range from high school students to parents of high school students to coaches to people who are competing themselves at whatever level they are, from, you know, potentially a 18-minute 5K runner to a 45-minute 5K runner. So these principles apply to any of those folks that fall into any of those groups, really everybody. I mean, you sort of alluded to that earlier when you were talking about how these same skills can be applied to the workplace. And immediately my mind went to doing a big group presentation, right? Public speaking. One of the things that most people fear more than anything in the world is being in front of a group and having to speak to them about a topic. So these kind of principles can apply to all those subsets there. And I'd love for you to talk about that for a minute, and then we'll circle back. Something else that you mentioned that I do want to talk about is the use of mindfulness exercises to offset some of that anxiety and stress. So to really help with that mental healing that we're looking at.
Yeah, absolutely. So within the mindfulness piece, and really what we're saying is like, okay, how do I use some of these principles in the moment? And I say part of it is, you know, the languaging is like, okay, I'm competing in something. Mm-hmm. And there's a difficult moment that I'm coming up against, whatever that might be. Right? Whether you're competing in a marathon or competing in a shorter race or, you know, competing, you know, at work for something in a project situation, you need to have a way to reset, a way to kind of neutralize the overwhelming situation in that moment. Right? And so there's lots of ways to do that. And if you kind of think back again, these five core areas, these to be set, breath, body, senses, emotions, thoughts, mm-hmm. can be used by anybody at any level, whether you are, you know, 12, you know, just getting into your sport seriously, or you are in, you know, high school or even college, or you're the coach, or you're, you know, even professional athletes, certainly professional athletes. You know, we talked about Kobe Bryant a little bit in terms of that piece. But the way is, again, part of it is, again, think about what mindfulness is. It's the awareness of what's happening as it's happening. And to notice, is what's happening right now helpful or not? If it's helpful, it's like, that's great. Just mm-hmm. allow it to be. And go with it, right? The ultimate, I guess, performance state, if you will, is what we call flow or the zone, right? And you can't like will it. You can't just say, okay, I'm going to really try hard to get in flow. That doesn't happen. I think everybody knows when they're there. It's this sense of, wow, it's like a larger perspective, and it's things are working out really well, but it's not like you have to consciously think too much about it.
Right. And so, more so on the flip side of that, where things aren't going well. That's when, in my experience, it's been, I adopted a mantra for running a long time ago, probably going back to my first marathon, which was the Chicago Marathon. Because you do go through tough times in endurance sports and mm-hmm. in life in general. So for me, the mantra and my mantra has always been, my legs are strong, my mind believes. My legs are strong, my mind believes. I'll repeat that to myself when my mind isn't believing and my legs don't feel too strong. But you've done the work to build up to that point. And even a mindfulness technique like that, which is one of the cards as well, will help sort of offset the negative thinking that starts to creep in at that point when you're not having that day where you're in the zone. You're having more of the opposite, where things are struggling. Maybe it's the ace bullpen pitcher who gives up a home run on the first pitch, or whatever it is. You've got to overcome that adversity and continue on despite how you may be feeling in that moment.
Exactly. And so the question I would ask, you know, your listeners, do you have the reset tool when you're feeling frustrated, overwhelmed, upset, angry, you know, what you fill in the blank, right? Mm-hmm. Do you have a way to reset yourself back to neutral? not necessarily to be like feeling terrific, ultra confident every moment. That's not realistic if you just add a, you know, you just made an error that cost your team a couple of runs, right? But can you at least set yourself back to baseline neutral so then you can operate a little more efficiently? And those reset tools are critical. So everybody should have those. And you could think about a reset way as something you could do or think or a perspective you could take in an instant to allow you just to, again, okay, I'm not going to be attached to what just happened. And I can just come to this moment and just give my all at this moment. And so during a race, absolutely, well, it's a short race, if it's a longer race, you got a lot of time. You know, if you're running a marathon or, you know, 10K, and you have more time to kind of implement reset tools, right? Mm-hmm. But sometimes things are so quick. Think about, you know, the runner that, you know, you're running a 100-meter race. You don't have a lot of time, right? We're talking seconds. Or, you know, the tennis player or the squash player or somebody that's competing in, you know, they're a diver. So they just have the moment that they're climbing to get ready and the moment that they're in the water and, you know, to get seconds. Mm-hmm. So to have a reset tool that you can use, that you can rely on. And these are things you practice ahead of time. That's what the book and the cards really help you develop those. Because we can't just say, okay, you know what, let me just try this and that's going to work for everything. It might, but you should have multiple possibilities that can work in different situations and different scenarios that you can go to. That then what happens is then you have this ability to look at a situation and say, yeah, that's really stressful. There's a lot of pressure I feel. But now I have some tools to mitigate that intensity. And so when you have that, you feel a little bit better. You have more agency over, I can take command of this uncertain situation. I mean, your listeners, either they're in athletics or they're watching athletics and they know there's no certainty here. There's no certainty. And because there's no certainty, what can I then build into that environment that is more certain? Mm-hmm. And if I have something that's
those variables that you can control, right? Like
exactly.
The preparedness, and this, you know, it all circles and ties into the anxiety, the stress, and how to alleviate those.
And
I think that's what you're getting at is like with these tools, having the reset tool prepared in advance so that when this happens and you need it, it's there and those sort of things. So yeah, continue to build on that if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. So think about this again, as you get ready for your race, your game, your presentation, right? We have a way that we get ready, right? We prepare for it again. And we might prepare if, okay, you know, you're giving a presentation and maybe you'll have extra visuals, right? And okay, so if the internet connection goes down, I'm going to have a backup on a flash drive that I can plug into the computer and show people, right? Okay, so I have plan A, plan B, maybe even have plan C, you know, whatever that might look like. Do we have plan A, plan B, plan C in place for our mind when the game, the race, the meet, the competition is not going according to what we thought? And again, we need to plan this out ahead of time. So obviously, and it's not negative thinking, from the standpoint of looking, what are the potential? And this is where sometimes people don't plan in the way when we're setting goals. We set goals, things we would love to have happen, right? Whether they're outcome-based, can't really control those as much, or really we can impact some of the steps to that. But the process pieces in the goals, we can really sink our teeth into in control. So we set those up. And we might set some steps to take up. But one of the missing pieces that we don't always do is like, what might get in the way of my performance in that moment? And again, it's not negative thinking, it's being realistic. This is being mindful because you're noticing, okay, there's potential here. I'm not going to dwell on it. I'm not going to like think all the time about that. Oh my gosh, this is probably going to happen. No, it's like, this is a possibility, right? Can I be prepared for it? And so what mindfulness allows you to do overall is to, you know, this may also be kind of overused in a sense, to be comfortable with the uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. But what that really means is that we're not going to know everything that's going to happen in advance. We're not going to know it's unpredictable, right? It's uncertain. Can we be aware enough of our skill set and to have the tools prepared in advance that we can be adaptable and flexible in that environment that is so unpredictable? And so a really strong athlete is not only gifted in their physical skill and their sports skill, but they're gifted in this particular way. They're gifted to have practiced and worked on. That's why I say gifted, mm-hmm. because anybody can train the mind, anybody. And so you need to work on that piece then so that overlays on top of your sports skill. And then what you have then is this, I can be comfortable no matter what happens. And I mean, you may still not like it. You may still be pissed off at the environment, but at least now you have some skill to navigate those uncertainties. And that's what we're talking about. That's what these reset tools are. Because then it's like, I can move past this. May not be perfect. We're not talking about perfect. We're talking about being a little bit better in that situation so that I can at least, like I said, get back to ground level, neutral. And then I got a better chance to perform at a higher level in that next moment. You may still not win. You may not make that next shot, but at least now you put yourself in a position to give yourself the best chance to make the shot, to win the race, to get that next point, whatever it is.
Yeah, I think there's a good point there about students developing those tools. This is not an overnight thing. You're not going to just become a mindfulness expert over. That's why coaches like you exist. Talk to the coaches, talk to the student athletes out there about what that transition period, what that timeline might look like for a student who hasn't really, you know, embraced mindfulness activities before or hasn't been coached on it. What does that look like to
exactly
go from blank to, yeah.
Yeah. So great question. And just to give you some sense, I've been practicing these skills and teaching them for 3 decades. Okay. And I'm still learning. Mm-hmm. I'm still growing. There's still things I'm not aware enough of, and I still make mistakes. Okay. But for somebody very new getting into this, it's not that it's so difficult, because mindfulness is just being a little bit more aware. This is why I think languaging is so important. Yes, I have a book, and you could pick up books that are like 5 times as thick, mindfulness, and immerse yourself, and you have to go on a month-long retreat and things like that. That's all fine and good. Those are wonderful things. But you could take 2 minutes. Everybody on this call right now, everybody listening to this, do this right now. It's very, very simple. Okay, we're breathing 20,000 times every day. Just for the next 2-3 breaths, start to notice and feel what it's like to breathe. Feel the sensation in your body to breathe. And that's as simple as it gets. We're already breathing. Can we now just focus and pay a little more attention, just a little more, to how we're breathing? And okay, maybe I'm breathing really fast. Notice that. And even so, here's the really cool thing about that. When you're more aware of things, because your body is trying to keep this equilibrium, That's what your brain is trying to build too. And so when we face a difficult moment, you know, the fight or flight response kicks in, you feel the stress, you feel the tension. It's like, you know, sometimes we try to, a lot of times we try to ignore it and just push ourselves through it, right? If we were a little bit more aware of it, just a little bit, and like, oh, my breathing is really rapid and shallow right now. Just the noticing of that, your body is going to automatically just start slowing down just because you noticed it. And then you could be a little more intentional and say, ooh, I can impact a little more. And I can breathe out a little bit more, extend that exhale. So it becomes this, whatever it is I'm doing, it doesn't have to be complicated. Some of the simple things is like I have a glass of water. Every athlete has water, has a sports drink. There's an activity in the book and the cards too. It's like, while you're drinking, can you just do it with just a little more awareness? Can you pay attention to taking a mindful sip? Just one. You don't have to drink the whole thing mindfully. Probably take you 45 minutes to do that. But just can you notice as you're drinking what happens? And then you'll be really surprised, just like you did with your breath. Can you just take a breath and feel it? Just notice that. Can you take a drink? You have a cup of coffee with you. Can you just take a sip? Notice it. Notice even before it goes in your mouth, what's happening in your mouth. Mm-hmm. As it goes down your throat, feel that. And here's the key. Here's what happens when you're being mindful. This is why people love it, okay? Because when you're being right here, right now, fully present, you cannot add any additional stress or tension or frustration or anxiety. You can't add any more, okay? You may still have some, but you can't add any more because you're being right here, right now. And when you're fully present, you are fully engaged, you are at your highest level of performance. So when we're not performing well, it's because usually our brain is like, okay, we're focusing on something we did already, past, something way out there, worries about the future, the anxiety about the uncertainty of the future, and then we can't be right here. If you can be more right here, and that's trainable, nobody's perfect at it. And here is another piece. The piece that we train is to notice, and this is why it's so wonderful when we're not right here, when we are out of our mind in a sense, because the only time we can train and build this muscle, it's like a mindful muscle. The only time we can do that, just like we're going to the gym, is to notice when your brain is somewhere else. And when your brain is somewhere else, to that past event that didn't work out, or again, magnified times four, so you're there a lot, or to the future worries or uncertainties, I notice that and I'm like, okay, no, be right here. And we can do that with the breath. We can do it with senses. We could do it with the drinking of the water. That's the skill we're developing. And then what happens then is then when you're not fully present, you develop a more of an awareness of that. So you check in, you notice, okay, am I here? Not here. You know, now all of a sudden you're engaged in your activity, you're running your race, and all of a sudden you notice, my mind wasn't here, but you notice it sooner. And then you can, that's the muscle you built, be right here more often. So it's this back and forth. Nobody's perfect. Nobody's right here all the time. I've been practicing this for 30 plus years. I'm absolutely not here all the time. But I do have a really strong awareness when I'm not here to pull it back and keep building that muscle. Sometimes it takes longer. Sometimes fatigue sets in. Sometimes you're a little bit more in a negative mood, or you know, there's more of a potential threat, right? I got to make the team. So there are only 7 spots on the team. There are 12 runners. There are 12 players. And there's threat there, right? Perceived or real, it's there. So that impacts your mood and impacts how you focus and think. That's why mindfulness can help you kind of overcome that a little bit. So kind of like buffers these potential areas that knock us out of the moment.
Great point, Todd, on that. And we're going to take a pause right here and come back in the next segment In the next segment, we're going to talk to you about what are your next projects, what do you have going on. And I also want to kind of help our listeners out there understand how they can connect with you. So we'll talk about how they can get in touch with you, how they can get a hold of these resources, and where they can find you on social media. So we'll be back in just a minute.
Great.
All right, and we're back for segment three with Todd Corbin, author of Mindfulness for Student Athletes Workbook. Todd, what do you have coming up on the horizon? What are some of the projects that you're working on now?
Sure. So got the book and got the cards. We put together some online resources too. So, you know, these have been in the works and they're going to be a little more focused. So, for instance, for those coaches out there, for those athletes, there's an online program that is a hybrid. It's live and recorded content as well. There's a lot of programs that just have recorded things, which some are really, really good. But I like to engage, and I find that if I'm able to have an audience of coaches or audience of athletes or kind of a blend, right, or those that support the athletes. So there's, again, a lot of people that support athletes, from parents to trainers to counselors and therapists and psychologists. There's a 6 and 7 week program that is built in a couple hours a week and live. And then there's additional resources there that we work through. We work through a lot of the content, some of it a lot more in depth than the workbook. But if you have a workbook or you kind of can kind of get an idea of some of the principles, will go really far in depth in that. And then obviously people have their own expertise in their different sports, and as an athlete. So we'll work through a lot of those kinds of, that's where the coaching piece comes in. So there's a lot of online resources there. I've been doing a couple of programs that are community based. So what I would love to be able to do is offer, like, for the larger community, it doesn't matter, you know, what athlete you are. If you're a runner, that's fantastic, or, you know, any sport, or anybody that supports these athletes, to have like a monthly gathering. So I'm working on that too, as far as, we'll call it a monthly coaching conversation. Mm-hmm. And we'll get deep into the weeds if we want to. You got issues going on. How do you teach this to your athletes? How do you work through things? I'm a parent. I can't get my kid to do X. The coach is doing this. What do I do? You know, so those are going to be very much like coaching conversations. And again, my role as a coach is to kind of help people through those periods where they're maybe not operating as efficiently as they could be. So there's a couple things like that. I know at one point you and I have talked about, and then this will become a reality at some point too. The workbook is terrific. The cards are great, but I've been keeping a journal for many, many years, decades. And so part of being mindful, part of being aware, is to notice what's happening in your day-to-day life, right? Mm-hmm. To notice where your thoughts are about things that you may not have done very well. Notice what's coming out in the future, and to have a resource to write those down so it could be fluid. And so what I wanted to be able to do is offer insight to do that, because there's a lot of science behind why that modality of writing and reflecting mm-hmm. is so powerful. And the benefit of it is that you can do it anytime, and it's always there. And so to add to that, give people some writing prompts, different ways mm-hmm. to think about things. So in the workbook, I have an activity, sports tracking, and basically it tracks your performance. Take an event. Maybe you did really well, we'll call it a strong event, mm-hmm. and take an event. Maybe you didn't do so well, call it a weaker event, and to notice, okay, leading up to that, what was I thinking about? What was I feeling? What was I feeding into my body to get a lot of sleep or not enough sleep? Kind of, again, tune into that. And then to have, okay, all those pieces, what was happening while I was doing that, while I was competing? And then as you then look back, what do I feel now? Mm-hmm. So that's the activity in the workbook, but I wanted a way so somebody can just kind of do that. So, okay, write about, you know, in this, the last week, something you did really well. And the way I look at it is like, we're building a banana bread recipe, right? Mm-hmm. And so you want to make a really good banana bread. And I have a really good recipe for a double chocolate banana bread, and sweetened with honey. So it's quite healthy, and gluten-free as well. But
sounds good.
Yeah. But anyway, so, you know, there are certain ingredients that go into that to make it really a delicious tasting banana bread. But it's not just the ingredients, because, you know, it says use 3 eggs, but they have to be at room temperature. And I made the mistake one of the first times I did it. I'm like, oh, you know, trying to quicken the pace of things. Mm-hmm. I could just pull them out of the fridge, put them in there. Didn't taste as good because the batter was too clumpy, and the cold in terms of the room temperature, the other ingredients didn't work as well. So again, this is the mindful piece. Okay, noticing in your event that you will call it competing in X or presentation or whatever it is, didn't go as well. What were the ingredients that maybe impacted? So like I would have somebody look at, what are the ingredients that go into making you perform your best? Mm-hmm. And what are the ingredients that impacted to kind of pull away from that? Again, awareness, notice it, very open-ended from you pick the moment, you pick the event, you pick the ingredients, because this is what being mindful is about. It's self-awareness. It's getting to know yourself at a deeper level, noticing what works, noticing what's not working, doing a little more of what works, a little bit less of what's not working. Mm-hmm. And again, it's not the conversation earlier. You don't have to be a mindfulness guru to get benefits from it. It's just a little more awareness. That's all. And a little more awareness in a couple of key areas can change a tremendous amount. So this journal, we'll call it, you know, an athlete's mindful journal, runner edition, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. For those runners out there, mm-hmm, you know, because we'll get that done. What to think about, how to think about, and just kind of get you to tune into what makes you really strong, and to notice when you're not there, which we're all sometimes not there, what can we do, right? And to notice that, and to just kind of support ourselves to kind of keep moving. And it's not just a linear straight line. It's like this, but hopefully using a journal, it kind of goes upward trajectory.
And you think about the holistic athlete there, which is really the strength of that type of activity is you're evaluating not just the physical performance, not just the mental side of it, but you're talking about the sleep, you're talking about the nutrition, all the things that compound to create the ideal competition day, whatever that looks like for that individual athlete.
Exactly.
So to reflect back on that, how did the workouts go up until that point? Was I sleeping well? Did I have other stressful things going on in my life? It all ties in together. Performance is all related. You can't, you can get in the moment, right? You can get like focused in, but you still have like all these things that contributed up to that point. So I think that's one of the key takeaways that I'm gathering here. Did I paraphrase that pretty close to?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because then it becomes this, you know, usable handbook to you performing better.
Right.
Right. And so you can constantly tweak that and constantly use that. And again, some of the things we touched on earlier, you know, the pre-performance things, but from a mindset and a mindfulness perspective, setting intentions. How do I want to show up on the course today, mm-hmm, and really feel that? And then when you have this assessment of the strong performance, this weak performance, the ingredients that I did, okay, to actually use mental visualization to layer it in your brain a little bit stronger. So mm-hmm. how do you do that? Right. And so there's just so much richness that you can bring to our lives. And again, not just for athletics, anything you're doing. You know, if you're putting together a gas grill that takes a couple of hours, you know, something you got from maybe IKEA, you're putting something together. It's like easy to get frustrated. Oh my gosh, the picture does not match what I'm missing this screw. You know, it's like this broke off. Okay, how can I use these skills to, okay, do we lay out the supplies first? Yes. Do we read the manual first? A lot of times, no, right? But this is the way to kind of say, no, what's best? It's like you read a book. Do we dive right in? Do we look at the table of contents? Do we read the foreword? Do we read the acknowledgments? Do we flip around? Mm-hmm. We do all of it, right? But there's a way that we can be more effective. And that's what a handbook, you know, that's what a journal could do. It helps you just be more effective and then actually look at areas where I'm not effective, and that's okay, but I can get better. And so here's how to do it. And so it, again, it's not being perfect. It's being just a little bit better, a little bit more aware, a little bit more focused, a little bit more confident when you need to, a little bit better at being able to manage my hot buttons when I get triggered. Okay. Mm-hmm. So those are all the pieces in that. And so, you know, you and I will work on that, getting that out relatively soon. I won't put a date on it, but
I'm excited to move forward with that. Looking forward to that product. It sounds like it will be a great resource for a lot of people and helpful. And I don't know if you were looking through my junk drawer, but obviously you might have a cup of leftover pieces from IKEA projects, screws and little wood dowel pins and things like that that didn't find their way into the piece of furniture or whatever it was you were building. I certainly have that in my junk drawer. All right. If anybody wanted to look up your website, get in touch with you through social media, how would they do that?
Yeah, sure. So you can go right to my website. So it's my full name, toddcorbin.com, toddcorbin.com. So you can find me there. And there's links on that to various other places. You could find me on Instagram, toddcorbin1, right? Be right here, right now, one moment. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook and Twitter, same handles. You can find me. Actually, Twitter is at Stress Management Expert. But again, get to my website. You could link to everything. So that would be great. The book is available on Amazon or any of those retail outlets you can find. We have a website directly for the cards. And that's actually, let me give you that. That's Mindful Sports Play. All one word, Mindful Sports Play. Mindful Sports was already taken, so we couldn't do that. But you can get those resources anywhere. We actually ship outside the U.S. on a lot of these products as well. And I have some folks in Australia using the cards now, and in Australian rules football. And so they're finding their way in different parts of the world, and it's really pretty amazing. And the other thing about the online course is you have access to it, just like these resources, for life. And you could take them and integrate them in wherever you're at. Again, not just for athletics. That's the beauty of it. It's for every area of your life, because that's what being a little bit more aware helps you do. Certainly on the course for racing or on the track, but in any area of your life.
Well, thank you, Todd. Thank you for coming on today. You can also grab a copy of the workbook or the cards from our shop at runnerdlibrary.com/shop. We'll have those there for you as well. It's been a pleasure having you on. Thanks for taking some time to chat with us today. I hope that everyone listening found this to be useful. There were definitely some takeaway tips for you that you could start using right away after this podcast. So, Todd, thanks again for coming on, and I look forward to continuing the conversation with you in the future.
Sounds great. Thank you, Don. Thank everybody for being here today.
Thank you.